So we're up to Daf Chesamid Beis, about to start Daf Tesamid Aleph. And we're up to Vyomer Abaye. So it's the last line on Daf Chesamid Beis. Ruvain Shemochar Sodil Shimon Shalobach Reis. Normally, when you sell a field, you give a chrayis to the buyer. And that's a commitment on the part of the mocher that if this karka gets confiscated for some reason, let's say, for example, the classical case would be if the mocher had a chov, he had borrowed money and he didn't pay up. So his bal chov, his malve, can come along and take away the karka, and he can take away the karka even from the lokeach who bought the karka. That's called shivut. But here the lokeach paid very good money for this piece of land. Now the land has been completely ripped out of his hands. He wants to come back to the mocher and say, look, buddy, you know, I paid money in order what? Just to pay off your chov? I mean, I sunk in so much money. So the mocher in the sale takes achrayis. Achrayis means a commitment on his part that if, in event, the land is taken away from the lokeach, he, the mocher, will reimburse the lokeach. Now, it doesn't mean that the mocher has the money in the bank. It could be that the money is no longer there. But somewhere down the line, you know, when the mocher gets the funds, he's going to have to reimburse the lokeach for the money that the lokeach put out to buy this land. So in this case, Reuven sold the field to Shimon Shalobach Reis, which means that they made the deal that, you know what, it's your tough luck, Mr. Lokeach. You're buying the field. I can't guarantee you. I don't know. You know, maybe it could be tricky here. And now we go on to Daf Tesamid Aleph. So this is where we're up to. V'yotzu Aleha Asikin. And Rashi says that Asikin comes from a pasuk in Bereishis, ki his asku imi, and that means ma'orim. In other words, there's a rumor that's, and maybe even a legal claim that the mocher doesn't own this karka. Could you imagine selling a piece of land that doesn't even belong to you? There have been scandals like that, you know. So now, what's the story here? On the one hand, the lokeach paid good money, but on the other hand, the mocher didn't take achrayis. So do we see the lokeach here, the buyer, as if he went gambling? You know, it's like what do they call that thing? Spin the wheel? You know, that goes around. What's the roulette wheel?
Yeah, roulette.
You know, and he doesn't know whether he will get the karka or he won't get the karka. It's worth it to buy it. But he'll have to suffer the consequences if the land is not it doesn't even belong to the mocher, and these asikin are claiming that the mocher doesn't own the karka, he had no rights to sell the karka. So what is the halach in such a case? Abai says the following: Ad shelo hichzik ba, if the lokeach has not yet made a chazaka, which might mean that he paid domim. But that's difficult because karka nicknames bedomim, so then the kinyan was clinched. Let's say he hasn't really paid for it yet, and he didn't make his chazaka. Is then yachal lachzer bo? The buyer could say to the seller, "I'm out. I don't want it. I never agreed to buy a land just to find out that it doesn't belong to you." So that's called mekatos. Misha hichzik bo. Once the buyer made his kinyan chazaka, right, and again he hasn't yet paid his mos yet, is ein yachal lachzer. There's no way that he can back out of the deal. The deal is signed and sealed and valid, and the lokech is going to have to deliver the money. It could be millions of dollars. It doesn't matter. But once he made the chazaka, the kinyan is clinched, now he has to pay domin. Maybe the mocher doesn't have this karka to sell. Okay, there are ma'arim, you know, there's a rumor going around, but we're not absolutely sure, one way or the other. and Lokeach is out over here. So immediately the Gemara says, my timer, why does Lokeach, it doesn't seem to be fair that the buyer should lose so much money in this deal. The Amar lay, because the seller turns to the buyer and he says to him, Chaita de Kitre Savart Vikibalt. So what's in this Aramaic of Chaita de Kitri? Kitri, I can tell you what it means. That's an old word. Kitri is when you tie something up with a knot. And all of a sudden the Shabbos deals with kosher, Melech is kosher, Kitri. What's Chaita? Does Rashi say anything on Chaita?
Chaita de Kitri. Sak Shura.
Oh, Sak.
Male Ruach.
Oh, Sak. That's the key word. Now, I gave you a bag and I tied it up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what's in the bag. There might be jewels in the bag that are worth Hon Tofot. There might be air in the bag.
It says Male Ruach.
Right. You bought it. We call this in America Jack in the Box.
Okay.
You familiar with that phrase? You don't know what's inside.
Right.
You know, you might have won $1 million in the lottery, or you end up with a balloon that's full of hot air.
Right.
But you decided that you're going to enter into this deal. You went in and made the kinyan, knowing full well that I, the mocher, have no achrayas. Tough luck, as we say. And that's called chaita de kitri. Savart v'kivil. Savart means you knew that you were entering into this very roulette kind of situation, very risky kind of deal, and kivalt, and you accepted it. And once you accepted it, and you knew all of the facts on the ground and all the risks therein, you have to pay up. Oh, fine. Then the Gemara asks, "May emas hava chazaka?" What exactly is the moment of chazaka? And the answer is ki daish amatzri. When he goes around to the matzri, or the boundaries of the land, and daish means he sets up, he lifts up these boundaries. You know, they have these sticks and poles and kind of like a fence around the land, and that's called what? That's called a kinyan chazaka. On the Hebrew, he says, Tikein Gvulos Asod. He set up the boundary lines, the markers, or whatever they call them, around the field. That's already a Kenyan Chazak. So the Gemara now is going to analyze this statement of Abayit. The Gemara says, Dafka Shalobach Reis. All the above is because the mocher did not accept upon himself achrayus. Avol be achrayus. If the mocher said, I'll reimburse you if anything is taken away, lo, then this din doesn't apply. And even if the lokeach went ahead and made his chazaka, nevertheless he has rights to get back the money that he paid. Ve'ika diamri. Now there's another lishna, how to understand Abaye. I guess a different interpretation of Abaye. Afilu b'achrayas. Even if the mocher accepted upon himself achrayas, nami, nevertheless, the din is the same. And once the lokeach makes his chazaka, he can no longer back out of the deal. He has to pay for the money for the field. Di amar lei, because the seller says to the buyer, Achve tirpach. Achve means to show something, you know, display tirpach. What's tirpach? So let's see if Rashi says anything about tirpach.
Lecha beidin shtar tirpa shebadin natlu mimcha vashalem lecha.
Aha. So in other words, the mocher has a right to demand from the lokeach that the lokeach has to produce a document called a shtar tirpa, which testifies to the fact that the karka was taken away from him. Shebedin notlo mimcha. That whoever took away the karka is the rightful owner of the karka. And then and only then the mocher says, I'll give you back your money. Okay, that's the sugya of Abai. Now at this point, the Gemara is going to go back to something from the previous daf, back on daf Zion, and the Gemara there posited a stira between two psukim. And the question revolves around what quality of karka the mazik has to pay to the nizak. The Torah says, Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Kamar Yishalim. Meitav means he has to give the best of the best, the idis. Mm-hmm. And yet the Gemara has another pasuk which says, Bala Bar Yishalim Kesef Yashiv Libolov, which means he can give him kesef, maybe even can give him shava kesef, he can even give a bag of feathers, because he can sell it on the market. So we don't understand how to reconcile these two psukim. And now the Gemara is going to quote Rav Huna. Rav Huna Omar, there's no contradiction between the psukim, O kesef, O meitav. In other words, the mazik has two choices. If he's giving karka, so he has to give the best karka that there is. That's called meitav. But he could also pay with money. So let's say, for example, my shar damages your shar, and you took a loss of 500, I can give you cash. Mm-hmm. Now, if you take a look for a second here, he writes in the name of the Rif that what Rav Huna means is that kesef is meitav, he quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, and there's no difference between paying the best quality of karka and paying with kesef. They're both on the same level. They both have the same din of meitav. The Gemara says you can pay with subin, which as we said is like a bag of feathers, but in this case it means a bag of wheat germ. So that's a case where he doesn't have meitav. So what does the mazik do if he doesn't have any meitav? He has no kesef to pay. He has no karka to pay. So he pays with subin. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Eisvei Rav Nachman l'Rav Huna. Rav Nachman asks a kasha to Rav Huna. We learned in a brisa, based on this pasuk, Bala bar yishalim kesef yoshiv l'bala yoshiv l'rabos shova kesef afilu subin. It sounds like the mazik could pay with subin. Not the way Rav Huna had said it, that the mazik has to pay with kesef. If he has no kesef and he has no karka to pay meitav, so he pays with subin. So Gemara says he the lesle. If he has nothing to pay with pshita, certainly he could pay with whatever valuables he has, whatever is sellable. Mao de temai might have thought, if not for this pasuk, Amrina lay, we tell the mazik zil tarach zavin. The nizak doesn't want to go around trying to sell a bag of feathers. You know, you go out and transfer it into liquid assets. I see lay kesef, bring him money. No, the nizak has a right to demand. I want money on the table. Kamash malon. The pasuk says no. Even if all he has is subin, the mazik can pay the nizak subin. And now it's the nizak's headache to go to the marketplace and sell these subin. He's going to have to carry, you know, get a mule and carry bags of subin to the market. Now here there's a tosis, Dibra Maskel Rav Huna. You see that? It's the third tosis on the page. Mm-hmm. And here also, he quotes the shita of some of the Rishonim, the Rif is also important, and Rabbeinu Chananel, Delechatchil, the Mazik has to pay Kesef, if doesn't have Kesef, he can pay with Karka. And then he quotes Tosis, and Tosis quotes the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that there are three different levels, three dinim in Gvias Chov. The first din is the Mazik, Lechatchil, has to pay the Kesef or Meitav. If he doesn't have either of those two, he can pay with subin. Then there's halacha prias chov shel halva. So we're not talking about a mazik and a nizak, we're talking about a borrower and a lender. And lechatchila the din is, that he has to pay kesef. If he doesn't pay kesef, then, and only then, he doesn't have any kesef to pay, then he pays with karka. And if a person, this is the third din, hires workers, he's got to pay them in kesef. If he doesn't have kesef, he's got to sell the shirt off his back in order to pay them kesef. So a poel, who's a laborer, has a right to be paid in kesef. Omar Rav Asi, Sofim harei hein kikarka. That monies have the same status as land. Lamai hilcha. So, to what is that relevant? Elam if we'll say leinyan meitav, that kesef is just as good as karka. It's meitav. Hainu the Rav Huna. So we already know that from Rav Huna, because he says, "Oh kesef, oh meitav." So the Gemara is claiming it should have been Vechein Omer Avasi. If Avasi is just agreeing with what we already had from Rav Huna, it should have said Vechein Omer Avasi. Obviously, Rav Asi is saying a new din, some sort of a chiddush. Elo l'shnei achim shecholku. You have two brothers who were dividing up the estate that was bequeathed to them by their father. That's called Chalukas Yerusha. And in this Yerusha, what did the father leave behind? He left karka and he left mos. V'notal echad karka. So one of the brothers said, you know what, let me take the karka. V'echad ksafim. And the other one took the cash. Uba balchov v'notal karka. Now what happens is the father owed an outstanding debt which he never paid up. And so the balchov comes. And he confiscates the karka because there's a shibud on the karka. So now it turns out that although these two brothers are both, both have rights to the Yerusha, one of them got karka and the karka was confiscated. The other one got mos, and he's sitting on, he's got his mos. So what do we do? Isn't this an unfair situation? So on that, Rav Asi says, "Ksofim harei hein kekarka." It means that the status of the brother who inherited the ksofim is equal to that of the other brother who inherited the karka. The ozel hai v'shokel parga b'ksofim behadei. Notice we view the ksofim as if they were karka, and if one of the pieces of karka, meaning the karka mamish, was taken away by the balchov, so now the first brother who inherited the karka no longer has karka. He has a right to say, let me get half of the money, let's split the money into equal shares. So the Gemara says pshita again. Once again, I don't know why I need Rav Asi for that. Hi bra v'hai la bra. One of them is a son, and therefore we recognize his rights to the Yerusha. And Hai Labra, the other, is not a son. Meaning, as far as the payment to the Balchov is concerned, if their father incurred a debt, both of these brothers are responsible, equally responsible, to make sure that the debt is paid. And therefore it seems that Rav Asi is not telling me any great chiddush here, because why would I think otherwise? Obviously, each brother is equally responsible, shares the responsibility to pay off the balchov. So at the end of the day, we have to make sure that there's an equal split in the Yerusha. Ika di Amri. So the Gemara therefore quotes a different kind of kasha now. In other words, until now, the Gemara is asking on Rav Asi Pshita. Now the Gemara is going to ask in Ika di Amri, Punkfaketi, either of the exact opposite, Le'idaki. So I don't understand the psak of Rav Asi. It makes no sense. The Omar Le, because the one who inherited the kesef, the money, Lahachi Shakli Ksofim. Why did I want Ksofim in this division of the estate? The Imaganvi, Lomishtal Mimlicha. I understood that, look, on the one hand, I have to suffer the consequences by taking ksofim. Let's say the ksofim are stolen. I'm not going to come back to you and say, give me half of the karka. Ulahachi shakalt ara, and you took the karka, knowing full well that it's possible you'll lose the karka. The mitrifa lo mishtal malach midi minoi. You're not going to come back to me and say, split the ksofim. No, to the same extent that I inherited ksofim with the understanding that if the ksofim go poof, if the ganav steals them, I'm not going to come back to you and say, give me half of the karka. You, from your part, your perspective, took the karka, knowing full well that in case, in event that the karka is taken away here by the Baal Chov, you're not going to come back to me and demand that you get half of my kesef, half of the kesef of the Yerusha. In other words, each one took his chelek, knowing full well the possibility that he may lose it. So there are two ways of attacking Rav Asi in two opposite directions. One way is to say Rav Asi is saying something that's pashut. For sure, both brothers have to equally share the burden of paying back the Baal Chov. And therefore, you know, to the same extent that the guy, the Reuven who inherited the karka has to pay back, so too Shimon who inherited the kesafim has to pay back, so we have to split the kesef. And the other way we reject Rav Asi is to say that it can't be. That adrabi, we don't accept the principle and the psak of Rav Asi, because the one who gets kesef takes the responsibility of you know, in the, shall I say, he takes the chances of losing the kesef, and the one who took the karka took upon himself, understood that he has chances, there's a certain risk factor that he may lose the karka. That was the agreement. But either way, no matter how you cut the cake, it turns out the Gemara rejects Rav Asi. Oh. So now the Gemara says, let's try to understand Rav Asi in a totally different way. Ella, says the Gemara, L'shnei achim shecholku, there are two brothers that divided up the estate of their father. Uba balchov v'not alchelko shel echad mihem, and the balchov of the father now takes away one of these two chalokim. And here's where Rav Asi says that one brother shel not al mimenu, that nothing was taken away from him, he has to give back his portion, half the karka, and divide up equally with his other brother. So what does Rav Asi mean when he says, ksofim harei hein kekarka? It means that brother whose karka was not confiscated by the Baal Chov, he has to reimburse his other brother, and he doesn't have to give him karka, right? So let's say there was a large piece of karka, a tract of land. Let's say it was 50 meters wide, and Reuven took, let's say, the northern 25 meters, and Shimon took the southern 25 meters. Now the Baal Chov comes along, and he takes from the north away from Reuven. So now Shimon has to reimburse Reuven for half of the value of the karka. Does he have to fork up half of his karka? And now the extra, you know, the remaining, the balance, 25 meters of karka has to be split. No. Shimon has a right to say to Reuven, here, I'm going to pay you off. I'm going to give you the cash value. I want to retain ownership on the karka. And that's called, in the language of Rav Asi, kesef, sofim arein ki karka. So the Gemara asks a different question now. Omer Rav Asi chadazimno. Why do Rav Asi have to repeat himself here? He's already taught us this halacha. The Itmar we learned in the Beis Medrash. Ha'achim shecholku. When two brothers split a Yerusha. Uba Baal Chov v'not al chelko shel echad mehem. The Baal Chov came along and confiscated half of the karka. And now we have a triple or three-way machlokes. Of course, right now we're interested in Rav Asi, but let's go through the three shitas. Rav Omar Batla machlokes. According to Rav, the entire split that they went through, this Chalukas Yerusha, is completely null and void. And we go back to the drawing board. And now we have a smaller amount in the estate, because a large portion of the estate has been taken away by the Baal Chov, but whatever's left in the estate, that's going to be divided up equally amongst the two brothers, or however many brothers there are. Ushmuel Amar Viter. Shmuel says, no, that Chalukas Hayirusha is final, it's irreversible, and no brother can have a tviyah on the other brother. So the status quo is maintained, and unfortunately one of the two brothers is out. Rav Asi says, notel revia bikarka or revia bimos. What we do is, we're going to take 50% away from the other brother, meaning the brother who was safe, right? He wasn't subject to the collection. Take 50% and divvy it up into two modes or mediums of payment. Half of that amount will be paid in karka, half of that amount will be paid in mos, in cash, and that's called revia b'karka, revia b'mos, right? Because you have 50% that he has to give back to the other brother, and that 50% is divided up into two halves. One half is given as karka, and the other as mos. So the Gemara now analyzes this. Rav Omar Batla Machlokes. Rav is of the opinion that we go back to the drawing board and we redivide the Yerusha. Why? Because Savari holds Achim Shecholku Ki Yorshim Havu. In other words, when you split up a Yerusha and each Ach takes his portion, is that's Yerusha. And that's the guarantee that each brother will receive his rightful portion. And when it comes to the Piron Chov, each one has to participate in the Piron Chov. So that now that half the land was confiscated from, in effect, the whole land of one of the brothers was confiscated. So now the remaining part has to be redivided. And that's called, as we'll soon see, Yesh Breira. What does that mean, Yesh Breira? In other words, the way they divide it up is going to have to be Borer, it has to clarify and guarantee that each one got his Chelek, that's Roilo, Birushas Aviv, that's coming to him. And the Chalukah itself does not have the ability to terminate the status of Yorshim. And as Yorshim, they have to pay their father's Chov. So therefore, if the Chov was collected from one of the two, the other one has to pay his Chelek. Shmuel says, Viter, Kosav Rachim Shecholku Lekuchos. Meaning we see something as brand new. We're not going to say Breira, and it goes back to the original Yerusha. As if to say that this chalukah is nothing more than a birur to clarify what you inherited and what I inherited, if you and I are two brothers. But rather, it's a gidiv lekuchos, meaning you're giving up your chelek, your zchus, your rights to that part of the karka that I'm going to inherit, and vice versa, I'm going to give up my rights to your half of the karka. And basically, we don't see it as if though this is setting up the Yerusha. But rather, it's considered as if each one sold his rights to his friend. To his brother, right? So I'm selling you my rights to this karka, you're selling me your rights to the karka, and that's what this chalukah is. And it's kalo kesh alo bachrayis domin. Meaning, I don't have to guarantee that what I sell you, meaning my rights to that half, I will back up, as if I was a guarantor. I'm not going to guarantee that lekicha, right? Because achim kilekuchos shalobach rayis not. So therefore, if the balchov was gove, he collected from one of those two lekuchos, then the one who sold him that portion, it's the rights that he had inherited in that land on that portion, he doesn't have to pay him for that. He doesn't have to reimburse. Now, Rav Asi is right in the middle. He's confused. It's like a tug of war. He is, on the one hand, sort of pulled in the direction of Rav, that the whole chalukah should be bought. On the other hand, he's also inclined towards Shmuel, that these are lekuchas, each one is makne, each one kaviyachol sells his chelet. So therefore, Rav Asi omer notel revia bekarka, Urevi b'mos. Why? Dimisafkale iki yarshim dami ilakuch kilakuchos dami. Do we accept the ruling of Rav of Kiyarshim Dami? And we go back to the drawing board and we redivide what's left in the estate. Iki lakuchos dami, or do we accept the opinion of Shmuel that it's like lakuchos shelo b'achrayis? And therefore, if you don't know, we're in the dark here, says Rav Asi, as to whether or not we accept Rav or Shmuel. We want to come up with a certain compromise shita in this suffix situation. And it's sort of like Shnayim Ochsim Batalis. You know, each one says it's mine, we don't know who it belongs to, so we split it in half. So Notel Revia Bekarka Urevia Bemos. So he points out here, Rashi Dimaskel E, that it means either he gets a quarter of the karka or he gets a quarter of the mos. So in other words, what we're saying is that we cannot interpret Rav Asi Ksofim Arein Kekarka in this particular context, right? Because at the end of the day, Rav Asi is saying that his opinion is like a suffix. You know, he's not committed neither to Rav nor to Shmuel. So what does it mean, Ksof Marein Kekarka? Elamai Harein Kekarka. So what did Rav Asi mean when he expressed himself by saying Harein Kekarka? Le'inyon Meitav. So we weren't able to successfully interpret Rav Asi as a case of Achim Shechilku, correct? That experiment was a failed experiment, and therefore we go on a totally different track. What is Rav Asi, in what context did he speak about Achim, the Ksofim Arein Kekarka, Linyan Meitav, which means that when the Mazik has to pay the Nizak, he can pay him with Kesef, he doesn't have to, he's not committed to paying with Meitav. Nu Iyachi, again the same cash that we had before. Hainu Rav Huna, he's just repeating what Rav Huna said before. O Kesef, O Meitav, that the Mazik has two options as to what medium he wants to use to pay back the Nizak. So why didn't Rav Asi just say V'chein Omer Rav Asi? I mean, attach it to Rav Huna. Or the Gemara should have said V'chein Omer Rav Asi. Amos, the Gemara says V'chein Omer Rav Asi, that we really have to push this in. And now we're going to start a different statement of Rav Huna, which is like, you know, in this sugya, it's like Roman numeral number 2. So if you haven't followed until now, now's a good time to tune in. Amar Rav Zera, Amar Rav Huna, b'mitzvah ad shlish. That when a person has to spend money to fulfill a mitzvah, then the cap, the highest amount that he has to pay is a shlish. So the Gemara says, my shlish. What does this mean, that for mitzvahs you pay up to a third? Now we turn to Daf Tes Omid Beis. So the Gemara suggests the following. Elam, if it means shlish beso, that means of all of his assets, he has to spend a third of his assets. 33 and a third percent of his assets is then elameata iasramile tlosa mitzvasa lese lakula besa. Once he gets to the third mitzvah, he's absolutely broke. He's got to give a third for each one of his mitzvah, and a third times three is the whole. That's all. He's left with nothing. Elomar Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Zera says that's not what Rav Huna had in mind. Behidur mitzvah. He was referring to how much he should add to the value of the mitzvah object in order to make it more beautiful, more hidur b'mekayim the mitzvah of zekeh v'anveyu. Ad shlish b'mitzvah. In other words, let's say the mitzvah is worth, let's say the mitzvah is worth 100. So he should pay 33 extra in order to embellish the mitzvah and buy something even more beautiful. Well, let's say, for example, he has the opportunity to buy a sefer, right? And there are two different sfarim that he can buy. He has a choice of two different sfarim. One is not mehuda and the other is mehuda. So how much does he have to add from his pocket in order to buy the mehuda? Up until a third of the value of the first sefer Torah that's not mehuda. So now Rav Ashi has a suffix. Boy Rav Ashi. Shlish mila go, o shlish mila bar. Now I was always taught to read it mila go, but I see he punctuates it as mila go, mila go, mila gov. I guess you read it mila gov. I always read it mila go, but he has a mila gov. So what does it mean mila gov? Mila gov means that he has to pay add a third from within, right? Mm-hmm. From within the dmei, the domim of what he would pay. So let's say, for example, one sefer sells for, let's say, 6 dinrim. Mm-hmm. So you take that 6 and you add a third to it. A third of 6 is 2. And therefore you'd have to go up to 8 if he could buy the second Sefer Torah, which is Mehudar. That's called Shlish Mila Gov. Shlish Mila Bar, which Shlish means outside of the Dmei Rishon. Bar always means the outside. So let's say the first Sefer Torah sells at 6, and that's not Mehudar. And now he'd have to add another 3. What does that mean, another 3? Because if he adds another 3 and he pays 9, then he's actually paid an extra third of the total amount. And as I compare the 6 to the 9 when he adds the 3. And if you say Mila Gov, then he's only adding 2, correct? Because you take the 6 dinrim and you add a third of the 6 dinrim. That's called Mila Gov. If you say Mila Bar, then what you do is you calculate the additional money for the Hidur such that when you add it to the original price of the Edom Ahudar, it adds 1/3. And that would mean that if the first is 6 and you add 3, now you've jacked it up from 6 to 9, so you jacked it up by 33 1/3. Teku, and the Gemara has no final conclusion about this. So this whole discussion could be very relevant in Esrogim. Like sometimes you see 2 Esrogim, one is pretty simple, the other is very very beautiful. But of course, leave it to the sellers, they know how to charge you for the more beautiful one. Mm-hmm. So how much extra money do you have to spend? You know, you could have bought, let's say, you could have bought the first Esrog at 60, and then they want to charge you 90 for the second Esrog that's more Mehuda. Mm-hmm. So if you hold Mila Go, you don't have to pay up to 90, or you have to go up to 80. But if you hold me labar, then you have to go up to 9. But my Rava Amri Mishmeder Abzera Ad Shlish Mishalo Mikan Vielech Mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So according to this version of the statement of Abzera, when you add a shlish for the Hidur Mitzvah to beautify it, Mishalo. Mishalo means that, you know, on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem writes down in the books, inscribes you for a certain amount of income for the whole year. And you're required within that income to go up a shlish for Hidur Mitzvah. But Mikan V'eluk, says Reb Zera, if you want to go even beyond the shlish, you could rest assured that that's not going to be subtracted from your annual income as it was katsuv, as it was set up in Shamayim, but rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make sure that the money comes from elsewhere. It's very similar to the concept of Hotzah Shabbos. You know, that what you spend for Shabbos is not subtracted from the amount of money that you meant to, the income that you meant to have for the entire year. So now we're going to start the Mishnah here on Daf Tes Amud Beis. The first Mishnah in this Masechta had set up the Ovos Nezikin and we spent a lot of time trying to define what's unique about each one of the four avos nezikin. Our Mishnah here, this new Mishnah number two, is going to get into details about under what circumstances you will have to pay as the owner of a mazik because you didn't watch it properly. So the Mishnah says, Kol shechavti b'shmiraso, any mazik that I'm responsible for, I have to watch it. And if I didn't watch it properly, I didn't give it the proper safeguards, hichsharti es nizko, it's considered as if I set up the hezek. I'm the cause of the damage. Hichsharti b'miktsas nizko, chavti b'tashlumei nizko, kehechshar kol nizko. Even if I only was a partial cause of the nezek, hichsharti means I was the cause, chavti, I have to pay for the entire nezek, as if I caused the entire nezek. And the Gemara is going to explain exactly what that means. Now, from this point on, the Mishnah discusses a different issue, and that is when property was damaged by a mazik, and it was a result of the fact that the owner of the mazik was not giving the shmira up to par, and therefore he has to pay nezek, is nechasim she'ein bahem me'ila. Okay, so when and under what conditions does the nizak have rights to collect compensation for the mazik? That's because the mazik was responsible for damages to nechasim she'ein bahem me'ila, which means chulin or mamon hejot, as opposed to hegdesh. In other words, I have to pay if it's not hegdesh. If I was mazik hegdesh, then I'm pot. And that we saw already back on Daf Vav Amud Beis. It says sharei ehu, and the Gemara darshan there velo shar shel hegdesh. And it's not just the din in shar, but it's a din in all mazikim. Then the Mishnah says, Nechasim miyuchadim. In other words, I only have to pay damages for property that is owned by private ownership, as opposed to, let's say, hefker, for example, that's ownerless. And the question is, what's the hava meaning here? I mean, if, let's say, I was mazik hefker, why would I think that I pay? I mean, who would I pay if there's no bailim, if there's no onus? So it's more logical to assume that perhaps we're talking about a case where a shor of hefker was mazik. But then again, you'll ask, why would I think, what havmina could there be possible that the shor shel hezek would have to pay? He says, im hizik shor shel hefker, it must be, as we said in the first case, that he was mazik shor shel hefker, patur milashalim. And again, we have to figure out what was the hava mina that he would have to pay for a shor shel hefker. Then he says, v'chol makom, that the mazik has to pay no matter where the damage took place, chutz mirshus hamiyuchedes lemazik, except for the case where the shor of the nizak had no rights, had no permission to enter into the reshus of the mazik, and it was damaging the reshus of the mazik. And here the Baal HaMazik has the right to say to the nizak, what were you doing in my backyard? You know, it's, my shor is here in my backyard. You had no right to go in here, and therefore I don't have to pay damages. And then he says, "Ureshus anizak v'mazik, if both the Mazik and the Nizak have rights to go there, then the Mazik has to pay. Mm-hmm. And then it says, Kshehizik Chava Mazik L'sham Tashlumi Nezek B'meitav Ha'aretz. And if there was a Hezek under all the above stipulated conditions, then the Mazik has to pay from the best of his property, high quality, that's called Meitav or Idis. So the Gemara now wants to know, what is this opening line in the Mishnah called Shechavti Bishmiroso Sharti is Nizko? And the Gemara quotes a Braisa to explain what it means, Machshir San Nezek. What does it mean that you, the owner of the Mazik, set up the Nezek, you were Chayev in Shmira, and you were lax or incompetent about your Shmira? Tan Rabbanan. Kol shechavti b'shmiroso sharti es nizkal keitzad shor ubar shemasron lecheri shod v'katan. If you own a shor, or you dug a bar, and you know what, instead of watching it and guarding it yourself to guarantee that it doesn't do hezek, you gave it over to a cheri shod v'katan. These are obviously individuals who are incapable of providing proper shmira. V'ziku is chayv l'shalem. Why? Because that's called Chavti B'Shmira, so I didn't live up to my standards, the demands of Shmira, and therefore Hichsharti is Nizko. I have to pay for damages. Masha Enkein Be'esh. But if a person gives a fire over to a Cherishot of a Katan, and as a result there was Hezek, then the person who gave it to the Cherishot of a Katan is Potter. So the obvious question is, what's the difference between Shar and Bar on the one hand, where by giving it over to a cherishot v'katan, you were poshe and your shmira, you were negligent, as opposed to giving over the eish to a cherishot v'katan, where you're not responsible? Why is that so? V'may askinon, what's the case? Ilema bishar kashur ubar mechuse. If it's a case where the shar was tied down and the bar was covered, so there was proper shmira that was provided, dikavasa, and if we find the mirror image, the parallel, Gabi Eish, is Gacheles. Gacheles is something that if you leave it alone, go out. What's the fancy word for going out? Extinguish. It will be extinguished, right? Is Maishnach, Maishnach. I mean, to the same extent that in the case of Shor and Bar, we make him pay, why should we say in Eish, he's Potter? And not only that, in both cases, it would seem that he did a proper shmira. Ella, but we have to say, by possible elimination, bishar mutar. Mutar means it's not tied down. Ubar magula, it wasn't covered. The kavase gabi eish, shal heves. Meaning, in the present state, the shar is a very dangerous damager, or in the case of the bar, that's absolutely exposed. And so too, in the case of shal heves, which is a burning fire, a flame that's going to spread unless you do something real quick, is Mashenkein the Eish Potter. Why should be Potter in the case of Eish when you gave over this Shalhevis to a Cherishot of a Katan? The Omer Eish Lakish made the Chizkiah with a statement of Eish Lakish Lo Shanu. There's a Mishnah later on that says that if you send a fire with a Cherishot of a Katan and the Cherishot of a Katan burns down someone's haystack, is your Potter Midine Adam? And you don't have to pay damages. Ella, says Reish Lakish, that's only Shemasar lo gacheles v'liva. That's only because he gave over to the Cherishot v'katan a gacheles. And this Cherishot v'katan went ahead v'liva, and he starts fanning the flames, what the Israelis call naftaf. And in that case, you don't have to pay, because this gacheles, in and of itself, is not a mazik. Aval shal heves chayov. But Reish Lakish says that if it was a shal heves, you are chayov my time with the bari azeka. What you gave over to the Cherishot of Katan in and of itself is a dangerous fire that's going to damage. So why do you tell me in this brisa that in the case where he gave the eish over to the Cherishot of Katan, and we presume it to mean a shal heves, that you're potur? Reish Lakish, after all, says in that exact case you're chayov. Li'olam, let's go back to the first understanding. Bishar kashur, ubar mechusa. udikavosa, and the parallel case gabiyeshes gacheles. So now we understand exactly why you're put in the case of gacheles, because it wasn't your action that created the hezek; it was the action of the cheresh of a cotton. Udikalamrit, maishtocha, maishtochacha. And you'll ask me, why is it that in the case of shor and bar that were tied up properly or covered properly, that you are potter, and yet in the case of the Eish, in the case of Gacheles, I'm sorry, in the case of shor and bar, you're chayv, in the case of Eish, you're potter. So the Gemara answers, shor darke linatuke, even though you tied up the shor with a rope, the shor has a tendency of letting himself free, of breaking out of the bonds. And bar is darke linature. In other words, people step over the bar, and over the course of time, it's going to fall. You know, it's going to collapse. So you should have been worried about that. And if you gave it to a cheresh of a cotton, that's not called shmirah. But in the case of gacheles, kama deshavikle, you can leave it the longer, the better. The amya. It's going to gradually, extinguish itself, and therefore the Baal Gacheles doesn't have to entertain the possibility that the Cheresh of the Kodesh will start blowing the fanning the flame, and creating a Shalheves out of Gacheles. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, that's okay for a Shlokesh, but according to Rabbi Yochanan Diomar, he says, Afilu Masalo Shalheves Nami Potter. Even if you gave a gigantic flame to a cheresh shot of a cotton, you are potur. And therefore, if we're going to look for the parallel to shalheves, the kavasa hacha would be bishar mutar ubar magula, a very dangerous shar and a very dangerous bar. And yet we said in shar and bar, you're chayev, but in eish, you're potur. Maishna hacha, maishna hacha. Hasam over there, in the case of Shalhevis, while you potter, Savta Decheresh Kagarim. What causes the Hezek? And the answer is, it's Savta Decheresh. In other words, what the Decheresh does is, he takes the Shalhevis, and he carries it from one place to the other. You know, he's holding this torch, and he lights up the Gaddish, you know, the haystack of someone. So he's called the Mazik. And therefore you put. But hacha, but here in the case of Shar, it's lo tzavta the cheresh kagarmel. It's not the intervention of the cheresh shot of a cotton, but rather the Shar as it is, you know, it's loose, is going to go out and damage. The bar as it is uncovered will do the damaging. Now, once we quoted this brisa that distinguishes between sending the shor and the bar in the hands of the cheresh shot of a cotton, as opposed to sending the eish to the cheresh shot of a cotton. So the Gemara now quotes another brisa that delineates the chumros, the special chumros that each one of the mazikim has, shor, bar, and eish, in contrast to the other mazikim. Tora Rabbanan, chomer bishor. We're talking about Karen now. If you take a look, you'll see Rashi on Daf Yud says that this is a Karen, which is the belligerent action of the Shor the Negicha, is mi bebar. What's the Chumrah of Shor, of Karen over Bar? Chomer bebar mi beshar. And what's the Chumrah of Bar over Shor? Chomer beshar mi bebar. Shahashor mishalem es hakofer. The Torah is very harsh on the case of Shor. If the Shor goes out and kills a human being, then the owner of the shor has to pay kofar. And if, let's say, the shor kills an eved kanani, okay, we're talking about, I should have made the point that in all these cases we're talking about a shor muad, and then you pay shloshim shalevet. And all these payments and penalties did not apply in the case of bar. Nigmar dino, after the shor killed a person, there was a gemar din, a final decision that the shor has to be stoned. Also, by Noah, you're not allowed to have any benefit from the shor, and even if you shecht it, you're not allowed to eat its meat. And darko lelech lahazik, masha inke bebar. So none of these dinim apply to bar, but yet chomer bebar mi b'shar, bar has chumris that shor does not have. Shabar mitchilas asiyosel in nezek umuad mitchiloso. Mashen came b'shar. So in the case of bar, you pay nezek shalom, the entire damage from the get go, and there's no room for any sort of leniency as we apply to shar, which is that on the first three negichos you only pay chatzin nezek. So those are the chumras of shar in contrast to bar, and vice versa. On the top of daf yud, we're not going to go into detail right now, but there's a chomer b'shar mi be'esh and a chomer be'esh mi b'shar, and we're going to look for the chumras of esh now, and we're going to compare and contrast shar, which is keren, to esh, and that's what we'll pick it up mitzvah shem tomorrow.